Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're crushing morning miles or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I am Gaius. Germanicus is here. We're in Londinium. It is a beautiful spring evening. We're looking to, later on, sacrifice to the god Augustus, who got us here, and then going to the theater. But in the interim, we're discussing events of these last days in the 21st century. Remember, we're secure here in the first. We've made certain of that. We don't want to be senators. It's too expensive and dangerous. We're in Londinium, which is the frontier of the empire, but it's very far from Rome. It's got a great big body of water that slows anybody down and wants to reach us with a message, and vice versa if somebody wants to rat on us. So we're safe. We make certain we take up our cups of wine in this very pleasant place by the Thames without any walls listening. But we're not saying anything too disruptive. Our emperor is, we know, on his way out. In the meantime, he gives orders. And the empire is confident of itself, as it will be for the next 15 centuries, through a lot of bumpy times. We're paying attention to the empire that the Americans have in the 21st century, because there's less confidence among Americans as there is among the Roman citizens we know. We begin with what has troubled America these last years, at least since 2014, which is what is to be done with Ukraine. Is this striving for freedom and the republic and the American way? Or is it what it was declared several times in these last years, the most corrupt government in all of Europe, which is a heck of a attribute. However, it is now at war, has been for several years. And within these last days, the emperor of the American empire, sometimes called the president, Mr. Trump, has offered Russia a deal that is too good to turn down. Russia gets to be in charge. Russia gets to win. And I congratulate Germanicus for being stout-hearted through these years of explaining again and again and again that Russia will win. Russia was always going to win. Germanicus, the floor is yours to explain to our very happy audience why this was never in doubt, and that the sustaining of Ukraine these last years pleased the Biden administration, as the sustaining of Ukraine before pleased the Obama administration. Now, Mr. Trump had an opportunity in his first term to address the inconsistencies. He did not. It appears that this time he's ready, or is he? Good evening to you, Germanicus.
Good evening, Gaius. We have to establish, although everyone should know, but apparently they don't, and that's not people's fault. It is perfectly due to the spigot of pro-Ukrainian and anti-Russian propaganda that's kept everyone's vision clouded for the last 3 years, or maybe the last decade. But it's important to establish why Russia won. And then it's important to establish why the leadership of the United States and of NATO could not see this. And finally, why they could do nothing about it, even as their situation eroded day after day. So Russia revived under Mr. Putin, and it came back. At first, it crawled back tooth and nail, and then it regained a lot of its composure and then confidence under Mr. Putin in the early 2000s. And the wars that Russia had to fight, first with the Chechen insurgents, and there were a couple wars with the Chechens, and they were bloody wars, but Russia's being able to defeat them, and this was early on in the period after the end of the Soviet Union, at least ensured that Russia would stay together. Then from there, as former Soviet republics created problems with Russian minority areas, and this was true in Georgia, with Abkhazia and South Ossetia that wanted to break away. Russia fought a short war in 2008 with Georgia and won it handily, and that perked up the attention of the West, but it didn't sink in. The U.S. was hell-bent on expanding NATO and in not embracing Russia, not bringing Russia into the fold the way they so easily could have into a larger European, American, transatlantic, trans-European alliance. Not doing that was a giant error. But then that error was compounded by an insistence on pushing NATO to the east. And it was one thing to bring in Warsaw Pact, former Warsaw Pact nations that had been seized, as it were, by Stalin after World War II. But it was quite another to go into areas that had been Russian for several hundred years, like Ukraine. And the result, predictably, because many predicted it from Kennan to Kissinger and more, that there would be a war over this because Russians in large number, again, thanks to Stalin, lived in Donbas. Crimea had been Russian for hundreds of years. And in fact, the entire swath of southern Ukraine had never been Ukrainian. It had been before the Russians ruled by Tatars. It had been a vassal of the Ottoman Empire, the Khanate of Crimea. So this was in every way a bad initiative on the part of the U.S., and the U.S. kept pushing it until it led to war. And war actually broke out in 2014 thanks to a coup that the U.S. engineered that led to a Ukrainian government in which extreme right-wingers who had descended from collaborators with the Nazis were a major element. And the war that began shortly thereafter persisted. It was a kind of a frozen conflict. And then ultimately, the U.S. had rearmed Ukraine to the point where it could establish dominance over Donbass and was preparing to invade Donbass and finally bring it to heel. And it was at that point that Russia intervened a second time. They'd intervened in 2014. Now in 2022, they invaded Ukraine to overthrow the government that was so inimical and that was hell-bent on joining NATO and bringing NATO military forces and nuclear weapons very close to Moscow. It was an untenable situation. Now, the war has been going on for 3 years, and for the entire 3 years, Western quote-unquote experts insisted that Russia could not win and that it would at some point come apart. It would come apart economically because of U.S. sanctions, and it would also be unable to impose its will on the battlefield, and that in the process of fighting, it would lose so much of its equipment, much of which was from the Soviet era, and it would lose so many men that it would be forced to come to terms. And in fact, the opposite attained. The Russian war economy was mobilized. Russians, which before the war supported Mr. Putin at a level of between 70 and close to 80%, supported the new war with Ukraine, the enlarged war with Ukraine, to an even greater degree. Putin has had no real opposition, and there's been a great enthusiasm, and that enthusiasm can be measured by the fact that when Russia mobilized, it was able to get by with volunteers. There were over 20,000 men a month and are still at that number joining, volunteering, enlisting today.
Germanicus, just a moment. I want to make certain of one thing. I'm following you very carefully. We knew this. It's generally understood. Russia goes to a war economy and wins ugly. We knew this. It's Russian history. Did Washington not know it?
Well, here I'll use an analogy to Germany after World War I. The Germans always feared Russia. And before World War I, the Germans were petrified, literally, of the great strides Russia was making in industrialization.
Yes.
In reforming their military. So Germany made its war plans all around the need to be able to ultimately defeat Russia. And what happened in World War I, and this is extremely important, is that Germany did defeat Russia. And so in World War II, it was not unreasonable for Hitler, looking at the mess the Soviets had made of the former Russian Empire and of the crimes of Stalin and the slaughter of his own general officers in the late 30s, that Russia would be a pushover. And so that similar kind of shift in analysis happened to the U.S. So there was incredible respect and anxiety about the Soviet forces that were only 100 miles from the French border and that occupied East Germany. The U.S. and Europe did not think they could hold these forces back, and we'd have to go very quickly to nuclear war. So there was that sense, and as soon as the Soviet Union collapsed, like a house of cards, we thought, oh, this was all a Potemkin village, that the Russians had pulled the wool over our eyes for 40 years, and that the new Russian Federation was equally as Hitler had thought of the Soviet Union in the late 30s, a door to be kicked down. You just kick in the door and it'll be over. And so the U.S. had switched to a narrative replacement for the Cold War vision of the unstoppable Russia, which was the equivalent of the pre-1914 German vision of the Russian steamroller. And they switched that out very quickly to the Russians are nothing more than a gas station with nukes. They're a paper tiger. They're a Potemkin village updated by a couple centuries. We convinced ourselves of that. And so for the first, I would say, 2.5 years of this current war, analysts kept saying, oh, the Russians are going to run out of missiles. They're going to run out of tanks. See, they're taking up old T-62s and even, God forbid, T-55s, and they're throwing them into the fray.
We just have a couple of minutes, Germanicus. Let's get to the payoff. When did Washington wake up? Was it Trump's election? Was it Trump's inauguration? Was it Trump and Putin? When did Washington realize that it's over?
It was a series of disasters that accumulated, the first one being the failed offensive
right.
Of 2023. And then this constant drumbeat of cities falling to the Russians and an obvious problem with Ukrainian manpower that was emerging that couldn't be, it couldn't be written away. It couldn't be sort of denied anymore.
What about the missing billions? Does that bother Washington?
Yes. But I think even more than the missing billions is where the missing billions of military equipment went. So 30% to 40% of what we gave the Ukrainians was sold on the black market. It's been an absolute calamity for us.
Was the Biden administration knowledgeable of these matters and skipped past it because they were always in an election mode, or did they not know?
You have to look at this gigantic American executive branch of just hundreds and hundreds of agencies and departments. And some of them know. NSA probably knew. There were people in the Pentagon who knew, and even in CIA, including the CIA director, Mr. Burns, who warned of not pushing Russia. There were lots of people who knew and lots of groups in the government. But the overwhelming desire on the part of the administration, which flowed from the deteriorating mind of the emperor himself, was that we must win.
All right, we have a minute left. Trump knows. Is that correct?
I think he does, because he said the kind of key phrases that will not only signal to the Russians that he knows, but also basically inform us that the actual events as they've unfolded or unraveled, depending on your perspective, are very different from the bill of goods we've been sold.
And the tantrum that Zelensky threw, does that mean he knows?
Zelensky knows everything. I mean, he's the corrupt leader who is also a puppet of a billionaire. Of course, he's known his whole time that he only is as good as the support he has behind him from his puppet masters.
We need to turn to the EU. Just a moment, though. Does the EU know?
The EU is desperate because the EU is really the elite. And the elites know that if this is all suddenly revealed as a debacle of their making, or certainly at least of their acquiescence, but they were too eager and enthusiastic to push the blame on the U.S. They pushed the war. The war is a debacle, and they will lose power. So what they're trying to do is create some kind of desperate plug-in narrative that they can...
A decent interval. Remember decent interval in Vietnam?
Yeah, something like that.
Kabul,
yeah.
Yes. The U.S. leaves, and X number of months go by where we're supporting them, and then Ukraine fails.
Right.
That gives them a way out. And... we need to discuss the EU the next time we meet, because there's comedy here. One of the pieces of comedy I enjoy is London and Paris are okay with Germany rearming. Now,
they don't believe it'll happen. Of
80
course.
Years ago, that was not a laugh line. Mm-hmm. So Russia is aware that Germany's going to spend money. But it needs energy to do it, so Russia encourages Germany to re-up its armaments industry because it needs lots of energy to do it.
And Germany, Russia, between 1933 and 1939, completely left Britain and France with their huge militaries in place in the dust. It rearmed in 6 years to the point where the next year it could completely defeat the armies of Britain, France, and several other countries. Germany would take decades to even get production going on tanks.
They're going to spend the money, Michael.
Yeah, but that money doesn't equal output. This is the terrible
truth. Oh, I agree with that. It's just that's what Russia cares about. The money.
Well, it does. But Russia spent the money and it's had the output. But I don't think the West is able to do that because it's deindustrialized.
Does Washington know that the EU is failing? I'm pushing this because I want to know how much they all are aware of the game they're playing.
Well, the EU can fail in a positive way and then discover it needs to get together, or it can come apart. And my feeling is I don't think that the calculus today is that the EU is so important that we need to worry, because the EU has declined economically vis-a-vis the US and the rest of the world so dramatically in the last 30 years that it is no longer the powerhouse of the world economy that it was in 1990.
Yes, but it's 750 million educated consumers, and so we can sell them.
Well, they're consumers, yeah. That's true. They're about 400 and some odd million
and
people.
And last difficult question, and then we have to go home. How long until the EU says Ukraine lost?
This will come in months.
Yeah.
Right now, the collapse of the Kursk salient and the bag of prisoners, as they often say, you know, is going to just be a defeat that no one can escape. And I think that's why the Russians want to conclude it quickly, because it will show to everyone that this is not a war that can continue much longer.
Germanicus is Makovlejos. I am Gaius John Batch. We're in Londinium. We're going home to America because there's Doge to discuss. And it might not be with us forever, but it, right now it's fun. This is Friends of History Debating Society in Londinium. We'll be right back with Doge from the Roman point of view.
This podcast is sponsored by IQBar. Your favorite clean, functional, delicious nutrition brand is raising the bar. With a little help from Thomas Keller, Michelin star chef of the French Laundry, IQBar and Thomas Keller have teamed up to create a salted caramel chip protein bar and yuzu mango hydration mix. With toasted macadamia nuts, rich caramel flavor, and brain-boosting nutrients, this bar is like having a Michelin star meal in your pocket. Pair it with the taste bud tingling yuzu mango IQ mix hydration mix, packed with magnesium and adaptogens to improve clarity and mood. With Keller's culinary excellence and IQ Bar's commitment to great taste and clean ingredients, this limited edition collaboration is simply mwah. And the best part is that 10% of sales go directly to Chef Keller's nonprofit, Mentor, that supports aspiring young chefs. Great taste, great nutrition, great mission. Go to IQBar.com today and enter promo code KELLER20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. That's IQBAR.com, promo code KELLER20.